I'd like to welcome everyone up to Summit Lodge for this Wasatch County School District Budget Study Session, as well as some other items that we're going to discuss. I'd like to welcome everyone here and thank you for coming. And I'll turn the time over to Superintendent.
Thank you. We've given you a packet of materials here. The agenda's on the front here, and we'll follow through on that agenda for the most part. We have some other items and other things that we can talk about a little bit later. They're on the very back part here, too. But what I wanted to say at the beginning of this is that the reason we hold this gathering is so the Board of Education can have some understanding of some things that we think are important to be considered as part of the budget adoption process, as well as understanding the adoption process itself. For the board, we have two new board members here, and so we want to talk about the process that we go through, the statutes we won't spend a lot of time on, but we want to talk about the process that we go through to get to in the development of a budget, as well as some significant new direction that we think is important for the future, and that's also part of this conversation today. And then there's some other things that the board wants to talk about, too, that are later on in the agenda that are also important that need to be talked about. So that's the plan for today. This is your meeting. That's the most important part of this. This is your meeting. We want you to stop us when we need to be stopped, ask questions when you feel like you need questions or clarification. We hope that there's strong discussion amongst each other as we talk through the different things that we're going to be talking through today. So we prepared this information for you to have and to peruse and write in and make comments on and help us understand your feelings for this. It is our responsibility, Keith and mine, to prepare a budget for you that you have to approve in June. And so this process is to help us do that. The legislature has finished its business. They've allocated what they're going to allocate. We're trying to gather as best we can our understanding of where we think the funds are at this point, moving into next year, how we might finish this year, and so forth. And then things that we think are significant for the board to consider as policy issues related to expenditures or new expenditures for next year and beyond. Those are all the kinds of things that will be part of the discussion today. So, Blake, with that introduction, are we okay then, everybody? So,
I just want to emphasize, make sure we ask questions. If you have questions, let's stop and make sure we ask that question and have a discussion.
So. Okay, thank you. So, with that, I'm going to turn the time over to Keith now. He's going to talk about the development of a school district budget. I think it'll pick up on the mic better.
So we'll go through, there's a little PowerPoint presentation that's behind tab that says development of, anyway, the budget. So, and as the superintendent said, we have a couple of new board members. This is the first time you've gone through this process. So I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. Some of it you've heard since January, but if you have any questions, feel free to ask. The budget process is an interesting process for a school district. We're three-fourths of the way through the current school year. Our year is from July to June, and so it's a very fluid thing, the budget, because the revenue varies month to month. It's not like we're in a business and you can pinpoint exactly what you're going to get. And so, here on April 24th, we can get pretty close to how we're going to end this school year. So, to me, that's the beginning of the budget process for fiscal year 14 is to figure out where we're going to end up fiscal year 13. And so, that's what I've spent a most of my time doing the last couple of weeks is trying to figure out where we're going to end this school year, because that gives us our starting point for next year. So figuring out where we're going to end the year and then looking at the forecasted revenues, that's the basis of our budget process. So we're going to go, Joe, go ahead and move us along. One more, please. As you know, as a school district, everything is done by funds. The biggest fund that we have is the general fund, sometimes called the maintenance and operation fund. And this is just the source of revenues for each of the funds. The biggest source for us is property taxes, because our assessed valuation per pupil is on the high end compared to some of the districts in the state. So property tax is our biggest source. I wish we had more interest income. We used to get a lot of interest income. It's ironic that right now we probably have more money in the bank than we've ever had, and we're getting less interest than we've ever gotten because interest rates are so bad. And then the state programs, the WPU funding, and then the various state programs that are funded through state revenues, and then federal programs. We also have a non-K through 12 fund. That's the pool, adult ed, preschool, anything that's non-K through 12. All the activity stipends, that's the biggest chunk.
Or recreation levy, is that?
Yes. And it's funded through property taxes exclusively. Let me back up. It's not funded exclusively because, as I mentioned, there are preschool programs and adult ed programs that do get state funding and federal funding. Sorry about that. The fees that are associated there are just fees that are paid for the preschool, and it's not a big chunk of money, but there are some fees paid there.
So if that has the recreation programs, and do those fees also include the fees that are collected at the high school for participation?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a different. That's the student activity fund.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that's not in that non.
So that is not in there. Okay.
The student activity fund is something that is almost exclusively from the high school.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I just pointed to you two, other than you were just there last year. The capital outlay fund. Again, most of the funding comes from property taxes. If we were to do a bond sale to build a school, that all goes through the capital fund. Debt service is just to pay for the general obligation bonds that we have outstanding. And then the food service fund is self-explanatory. There are a lot of federal funds that come through through the USDA for the food service. It's $1.8 million that comes through the federal program there. Go ahead, Jill. State funding used to be a much bigger portion of our budget than it is now. With all the cuts that have happened over the past 4 or 5 years, it's getting smaller and smaller. Can you bring up that whole page?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is that the whole thing? Or is there one?
There's
more?
One more. Thanks. The basic program that run by the state is what funds the WPU. The State Tax Commission and the USOE comes up with what's called the basic rate that is assessed every property owner in the state of Utah. Everybody pays that same basic rate, which this year was 001651, and that is exclusively to fund the WPU equalized revenue throughout the state. So whether you're in Tindic with the lowest assessed valuation per student or Park City, which is the highest, everybody pays that 001651, and then the state makes up that equalized. They collect all of that and pay it out in state revenues. It's interesting, Tindic would receive, you know, almost the entire $2,800 per student, because their property taxes don't generate much in this basic rate. Park City, on the other hand, has to give money, a lot of money, to the state to help equalize it for the rest of us.
Does that cover the entire WPU or just a portion of the WPU?
That covers the WPU. Yep. And then there are restricted programs, and there are three of them, special ed, CTE, and class size reduction, that is also tied to the WPU. So anytime it's not exactly equal to the WPU up in the basic program, but anytime there's an increase in the WPU, it gets its increase. It's close to the same amount, but not exact. And then,
let me ask a question on that. So
absolutely.
When you say we get an increase in collecting more than it takes to give.
No, what I meant by that is anytime the legislature says, okay, we're going to increase the WPU 2%, that gets the 2% increase.
As well.
Yes. Yes.
Their
so
WPU is smaller than the regular WPU.
So what portion? What,
slightly.
Yeah,
slightly.
What portion does, I mean, okay, so if we have an issue with too much class, too large of classes, can we dip into the restricted basic program and they'll say you need more money?
They send us, that's a set amount of money they send us.
It's a set amount per district across the state?
Yes, based on the number of students.
Okay.
Based on the number of.
So everyone in the whole state's getting additional WPU for
yes.
those three
right.
programs based on their size of
right.
school. Okay.
And special ed students generate different WPUs depending on their disability.
So are we collecting under the basic program for the students and then we get additional funding
yes.
under the basic?
For instance, our October 1 count this year was just under 5,600 students. Our WPUs is about 7,200 students because
so
of the special 56, ed generated
additional. We get it for all of them and then the whatever's generated.
So for CT, it depends on the number of kids in your CT classes, not just total
right.
enrollment.
When the legislature says they fund growth, is it through the WPU increase?
Yes.
That's what they're talking about. We're going to fund growth. Is through
right.
this.
Okay. Right.
They add additional money to create. Yes.
Okay.
And then other state revenues, there are other programs such as transportation and the various block grants, student services, those types of things that are funded through state revenues. But you never know year to year. It does not get the WPU increase. Some programs are cut entirely. For instance, we used to get a lot of money from the state, and it was just called Social Security and Retirement. We used to get almost $2 million to help pay for those benefits to the employees. That's all gone now. We only get about $180,000 of that $2 million now. That's where they made their biggest cut back in 08, 09 and on. But anyway, there are a lot of other programs that are funded by the state and then one-time monies as well. Any questions on that?
When they made those cuts, did they also mandate that we continue to...
Oh, we have no choice but to pay it.
They cut our revenues but then mandated that we continue to pay it.
Yeah.
I have a question on class size reduction. So does the whole state have a threshold of what's the minimum or maximum that they'll allow? Because I know we've kind of set a threshold within our district.
The various classes, especially, you know, K through 4 or 5, the state says they fund it at a certain level. I'm sure it varies district to district. There used to be one of our tax levies that we used to levy was called the board leeway, and that was entirely to be used for class size reduction. That's been rolled up into, they consolidated just this year, so that's not that way anymore. But I'm sure if you went down to Alpine School District with their tremendous growth and they have 34 kindergarten kids per class, you know, they would, and then you go to Park City and they have 17. So it varies widely state to state. I think we're in pretty good shape here.
We only receive so much per student as discussed here. And school districts then make other decisions related to, like you said, Debbie, related to here's what we're doing based on the funds we receive. And we've been consistent on trying to maintain those levels. Jim has been given, and I gave it to Vicki. So, sir, I brought it when I came and have used the same funding per kindergarten. When I say funding, the amount of teachers teacher per students. For kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth are at the same level, and the high school's at a certain level. Jim understands what those numbers are, and we've followed those formulas, and they've greatly helped us to grow, particularly in terms of where we were when I arrived here. We were suffering from a financial imbalance. Terrible imbalance at the time to where now we have a strong financial balance, a fund balance, and so that helps maintain that stability. But every school district is in the same boat. They have to create those, and that's what happens.
Well, with the recent questions about that one particular class at Old Mill, I just think that would be a really good thing to especially share with the public and others that it's a across-the-board thing. I think people forget that it's a whole district decision and not just one class in one school.
And the administrator is working with those families and that group and those teachers on that issue.
Okay.
And doing exactly what you're saying.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Okay, the next slide talks about our property tax levies. Up until this year, we levied.
I don't know what's along.
Bring it all up if you want.
One more.
There you go. Okay, so prior to this year, we had. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We had 10 levies that we could levy in our property taxes. This year, they rolled the reading, the judgment recovery, the tort liability, the transportation, and the recreation into the board levy right here.
Tell me again which ones they rolled.
The transportation, tort, judgment recovery, reading, and recreation were all rolled into one.
The board levy.
Their reasoning was to give the districts more flexibility. At least that's what they said publicly. What it did.
That was the public message.
It put a cap on one of the levies that had never had a cap before.
Just the recreation one?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But that's a huge one to put a cap on.
Yeah. When you say they, are you saying
the legislature? Yeah. There's an error on this slide. The maximum on voted levy is 002. So we levy the basic levy, which is statewide, and then we have a voted levy, we have a board levy, and then over here we have the capital levy and the debt service levy. So there's only five now. The bottom one there, the reading levy, was one that the board never did elect to do. A lot of districts did it to fund the reading recovery programs, but we just funded our program through the voted board levies.
So how close... And maybe you'll get to this. Are you going to tell us how close we are to the maximum of that levy? Is it going to affect us that they've done this?
Yes. That is, the next slide shows where we currently are.
Try to read that one.
Sorry about that. That's a lot of little numbers.
Uh-oh.
But you can see we're right here.
We're almost there.
Yeah, our board leeway levy is, our max is 0018, and we're at 001587. The capital levy is, the max is 003, and we're at 0013. So we've got a lot of room there. The voted leeway, the max is 002, and we're at 001486. And then we have a debt service levy. There's no max on that. It's just whatever you need to fund your debt service payments. And ours is 001659. So you can see our total rate is 007713, which is just slightly higher than the state average of 007287.
Can you go back to the previous slide?
I can't.
It says voted levy is 000 maximum, but then I thought you gave us a number.
002.
So the range of, the range of tax rates that the various school districts levy is quite wide. Wayne, with their very few students and fairly high assessed valuation per student, is 003843. We're at 007713. And then out in Tooele, with a very low assessed valuation per student, is 0.01. You don't see that very often for a school district to be greater than that. At least I've never seen that.
Yeah, that's, I've never seen that.
That's from low to high down.
Yes.
And you can see where we are in that list then.
Okay, go ahead. One thing that whenever we do a bond election and we have to go out and try to get a bond rating, one thing that the bond rating companies want to see is how much room you have to generate additional revenues. And they love to see that the board is willing to do that through the truth in taxation process, which we have for several years in a row. We did back in the early 2000s. We haven't done it since 2008. But you can see that this is our actual rate. This is what the maximum is, and this is how much additional revenue we could generate as a school district if we were to increase our tax rates to their maximum. The basic rate, we have no room to raise that. That's assessed by the state. But we could generate an additional $1.8 million in the voted leeway, an additional $766,000 in the board leeway, $6 million in capital, and then debt service, there's no room there. You just assess what you need to pay your general obligation bonds. You can see that for every primary home of $100,000, for every $100,000 value of a primary home, the taxpayers are paying $424 per $100,000. If we were to raise it to the max, it would go up to $556 per $100,000 value, a difference of $131.84. And then secondary homes and businesses that are assessed at 100%, you can see that what it would do if we were to raise our tax rates to the maximum.
How often are you allowed to change the rates?
It's an annual thing.
What happens is if
you had the desire to do that, we would build it into the budget adopted in June. We would have a truth in taxation hearing in August and finalize the rates so that they could go out for November.
So can you tell me what the process of, I've never been on a truth in taxation hearing, where does it go, who hears it?
Well, you have to advertise it 3 weeks in a row. There's a set advertisement that you have to do. It has to almost be it has to be a quarter of a page of the Wasatch Wave. And it's a set form, and they've designed it to make it look as bad as it can possibly look.
Horrible. Just kidding, I paid attention to that.
Yeah,
sure.
And
it sounded horrible. It does.
And anyway, and then it's a public hearing.
Who makes it sound horrible? Like
the state.
It's right in the code.
It's right in their code of how you have to do it.
The only thing we get to put is the Wasatch County School District.
Say so much of an increase.
Yep.
Okay, so you run that for 3 weeks.
And then you hold a public hearing where, I mean, they have an opportunity to come up and address the board and say why it would be horrible or why it would be good. Mm-hmm. And then the board has an option at the end of that to either adopt those rates, adjust them, or
is the board decision
not
the rates. No vote by the people?
No.
Voted leeway is a vote by the people. That's a different levy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we passed the voted leeway to get our maximum up. I thought I had the date in here. Anyway, back in November of 2004, we increased our maximum in the voted leeway to the maximum that it could be at the time.
We raised it up to what the state would let us.
1984 or 94?
2004.
When you maximized the rates, did that include the capital outlay also?
Yes.
On that previous slide?
Yes.
That's what the taxes would be to maximize everything.
Right.
Okay. Other than debt service. Okay.
Yeah, that's.
And that's a yearly amount of tax.
Yes. And so as we get looking at our tax rates for next year, The process is the county assessor, after he's done his reassessments of various portions of the county, he tells us what our assessed valuation is, total. And that's what generates what's called the certified rate. And that certified rate goes up or down depending on if assessed valuation goes up or down. And it guarantees us the prior year budgeted revenues. So, for instance, if property taxes, if the assessed valuation went up, certified rates would go down, because all it's going to do is generate the same amount that it generated the year before, less growth. We do get the benefit of growth.
Do you find that the growth in the amount we receive from taxes parallels the growth of what we see student growth? Like, do you see a 6%?
No.
For instance, the answer is no to that.
For instance, we had 6% growth in students this year. Our assessed valuation actually went down. And there was very little growth.
And some people got a tax increase because of that, because we were generating the same amount.
We needed
at
least to.
Yeah.
Property values go down.
Tax rates go up.
But we're
not generating any more money.
Year to year, we're always at least guaranteed what we had the year
right.
before. And none for growth.
No, we do get growth.
We do get growth
yes.
in the tax.
If there's growth.
If there is growth.
Last year, there wasn't growth only in the students. So it's a double negative
growth,
to us.
Right. Growth in students, but not growth in assessed valuation.
And
that's probably tax growth.
Right.
So people just pay
yeah, I'm not
year to rent and not.
Right. We're not talking about growth in number of students. We're talking about growth in. In number of homes being built.
For example, what happened, I think last year or the year before, there was a significant decrease in property values out towards the Jordanelle Basin.
Yeah,
big homes that were built out there, and the values
decrease.
Went way down. So they adjusted it, and then they spread that adjustment out over
the rest of us.
Or
mm-hmm.
anyway,
right.
So overall, it came down, but some people's taxes
went up.
Because we still have to collect the same amount.
I think everybody's taxes went up. This just shows.
Explain what that one is about.
Well, this is just the same numbers that you saw with Tooele being the high. Here's the state average. We're right here, and then Wayne is way down there.
And that's just tax rate, just the number itself.
Right. That's just the total rate. Okay. So any questions on property taxes and the various levies that we can assess as a school district?
I'm just curious. Park City and Daggett seem very different from each other. But yeah, they're close
actually,
to the lowest, too. How do they make that work?
You know, Daggett has so few students that their assessed valuation is per student is much higher than ours.
Okay.
Park City's is like four times what ours is. Daggett's is like at least three times what ours is, because they have so few students and all the recreation homes out around Flaming Gorge and that. So,
is Park City because a lot of second homes?
All the ski resorts and lodges and
property tax collected there is, I don't know how many times more than ours, but it's a lot more.
It's four times.
So most of those are because of a low student enrollment, except Park City being the outlier.
Right.
That's why there's a push from other legislators and districts to equalize the property tax, because they'll even point the finger at us because we have a lot of second homes here. We don't have more Park City tax compared to other areas and districts.
Anytime they talk about equalization, it's going to really hurt Park City. It'll hurt Salt Lake School District. We were like fourth on the list
of the
people that would hurt the most. So we like it when.
And because it's already equalized, I mean, we're one of the models in the nation right now with how we equalize currently.
And that was Craig Powell's argument, not this year, but last year, saying we're already the most equalized state in the nation. And he's fought that for us.
They want to do more. We're the poster child.
Yeah.
What they count as.
Any questions, then, on property taxes? That's Property Tax 101. Okay, this is the current year that we're almost through. We're 80% through. These are our budgeted revenues by fund and by source. The basic rate's going to generate $6.6 million. Property taxes, you can see if you add up those, of our $51 million in budgeted revenues, property taxes is right around $30 million of it. It used to be that state revenues played a much bigger portion, a much bigger part in our revenues, but with the cuts from the state, property taxes has had to fill the hole. So we got $31.6 million in local revenues. That includes interest and fees that are charged. And then the state generates almost $17 million, federal $2.8 million. And that's been pretty stable. It is going to go down for next year because of the sequestration. We can expect about a 5% reduction in federal revenues next year. Okay. I think we're almost done with this. This is my projection for where we're going to end up at the end of this year. Our original budget showed $51,374,000 in revenues, $51,374,000 in expenditures. I think we're going to bring in about $52 million, just over $52 million. We're going to spend $50.5 million, so we're going to add $1.5 million to our total fund balances. That's not just M&O. That's the vast majority of that increase in fund balances is because right here we haven't built anything since we finished the Heber Valley addition. And so our capital fund is going to go up about $1 million.
So that number doesn't reflect our total fund balance just what you would add to what we
right.
already have.
This is just right. 1 year's budget. This isn't the ongoing budget.
And we'll get to
that's
that.
That's spread across all the different funds, that 1.5 there.
We will get
now
to that.
Superintendent, spread across what?
The 1.5 million right here is all the funds, capital,
everything
M&O,
yeah.
debt service, non-K through 12, and...
But you're telling us about a million of that is capital.
Capital.
Right. And that...
But we're going to spend that. We already know that.
After
so we've been discussing those things in other meetings, what our needs are, and this is helping us toward
we're
that.
We're going to have it.
Right.
It's extra.
I think Paul and Eric have already spent that. So we're going to get to that here. We're going to get to that here in just a moment. Sorry.
A little bit of honesty, a little bit of boss, a little bit running over right there, but you know, we understand.
So that's all. This is much better news than I delivered to you last year at this meeting. If you'll remember, we were faced with some deficits in our, especially the M&O fund, of almost $800,000.
No.
You need some water? Okay. This year we were able to add slightly to our M&O fund balance, which was great. That gives us a much better starting point. It opens up a couple options on what we can do. Again, that's a discussion that we're going to have as soon as we're done with Paul and Harry. But,
you guys are really popular today, I can tell.
We're saving that. I wish I could get my part over and then I would leave. But they're going to make me stay and listen to this again.
Because you have to deal with the ramifications of what they do, or we do with them.
Yeah.
Just say no.
It's like a drug.
Just,
drug dealer. Okay.
Please just say no.
Not what you said last night.
Yeah. Yeah, Paul and I were talking about what he's going to talk about today, and it'll rock some people's worlds.
No teaser there.
That was meant in a
are
positive.
The people going
to... Oh, yeah. It's all positive.
Is it going to rock the people in this room? Or
no.
Okay.
You guys will be excited.
Okay.
Other people will hate
other
us.
A few
people at a few buildings that will wonder what happened to their life. These are the various expenses by fund that we have to budget for. Now that we've talked about... you know, a starting point and revenues, now we start putting, you know, now we sharpen our pencil and start talking about expenses. The vast majority of the expenses, especially in the M&O, are salaries and wages. It's almost 90% of our expenditures in the M&O fund is salaries and benefits. I said salaries and wages. I meant salaries and benefits. And we're faced with some pretty big increases. And again, that's...
We'll be getting to that.
We'll be getting to that, but we have some big benefit increases that we got to fund this year. And then we do professional development. We pay for supplies out at the schools. We pay for textbooks, and we pay for equipment. Those are the expenses in the general fund. The K through 12 fund is just activity stipends, and then the expenses associated with preschool and adult ed. Capital outlay is strictly that. It's buildings, it's equipment. The you know, Carl's program is funded through the capital fund. Bus purchases, those are the big expenses in the capital fund. Debt service, again, is just payment, interest, and principal on our outstanding bonds, and then food service is what it is. Any questions? That's kind of the process that we go through as we get working on a budget. This meeting is essential to that process. because it gives us the direction that the board wants to go. The superintendent collects everybody's wish list, and it's a pretty extensive wish list this year. And now it's up to the board to say yay or nay to those items, depending on what we can afford to do. Again, this year, we are in better shape than we were last year at this time, so that's a good thing. It's been a good year financially, mostly because of the tremendous growth of 6.5% or whatever it was. Our state revenues, you saw that a couple slides ago that we had 51 million something budgeted, and we're going to bring in about 52. Most of that is state revenues associated with the number of students that we had. So it's been a good year that way. Any questions? You're on.
Thank you, Keith. Well, these two that you've heard about are setting up. Let me just say a couple things. This will all tie together. But I felt, because we had Stephanie and Brent here with us, that we would kind of follow this order, this particular meeting, and so they can go back to the school when we're done and do what they need to do. There's been some discussion amongst the leadership staff of the school district about what we call digital conversion. And it's really something that's been kind of growing, and then our conferences that we've been to, both at the local conference here in the state as well as our national conference, there was a lot of conversation about moving technology forward in the schools. And so what we're going to propose to you today is a plan about how we might move technology forward in our school system. And that's what this presentation is about. And so Paul and Eric, Paul's been asked to lead this. He's invited Eric and Carl and Stephanie and Brent to be part of that committee, and there may be others that I'm not aware of, but that's what this is about. So this presentation now is a proposal, a plan, and discussion with you about how we might move towards a digital, total digital conversion for our school district. Paul?
Thank you. We're really excited to be here today to present this to you guys. Without building it up too much and just letting you see the presentation, I do want to say a couple things. We went about researching this. We've spent a lot of the school year. I think this kind of came to be in the early as the school started this year. We had some conversations with Stephanie as she was kind of been given the assignment from her principal to help prepare her school for the one-to-one initiative as it moved up through the school district to her school. She'd been talking with Brett. We had been trying to help from the curriculum side, and there was a meeting or two where we all got together and said, you know, what can we do to really make this program good and give the schools the support they need to really make it successful. And of course, with Terry's blessing and support, we went about researching what one-to-one really is looking like, not only in the state, but around the country, and went about trying to find out those districts that are really doing this and doing it well. And so with this five-member leadership team, we, as you know, we went on a couple of visits. That was after some pretty extensive research as to where we should go. We chose two school districts that were different in the way they had implemented one-to-one, and two school districts that were very different in the timeline as far as where they were at in the process. And our research certainly wasn't limited to just those districts. We feel like we've done a pretty comprehensive job, and I really want to say as we start, And what we're going to show you today was a team effort, and we even we included Jim and Jason in some of our meetings, some of the other principals, but these four people right here with myself did a lot of work, and this presentation that we're going to give to you today is a product of everyone's collective work in what we think a digital conversion might look like. And so one thing we found out early is we didn't really like the one-to-one term for our whole program. We feel like the one-to-one initiative of bringing a device to every student is just a part of a larger program. And the larger program is a true conversion as a school district from a paper school district to a digital school district that includes our curriculum, including the textbooks. And so after researching this, after going on some visits, after having some great discussions with this group and also throughout the school district, I really feel like as I stand here today and we prepare to give you this presentation, it reminds me of a school board meeting about 7 years ago when many of this same group came before you and said, we need to look at a new concept out there called PLCs. And we got a blessing and a support from the school board to go forward. And there's been some really awesome and exciting things happen. And substantial change really took place in Wasatch School District because of that initiative, that proposal change. And I feel like this is similar to that. This is the most exciting thing that I've ran across since PLCs, and I think everyone on our committee would say the same thing. I think we're on the cusp of doing something really great for Wasatch County School District. So with that, Eric's going to start. He's going to talk a little bit about the purpose of a digital conversion. I'll talk about what maybe some of the curriculum looks like and also a plan. Carl will talk about what the devices would look like at the different grade levels, a little bit about making our classrooms digital friendly. And just because of our district positions, and these guys are very busy running schools, they didn't get as big a part on the program, but you will see their fingerprints on the presentation. And there's going to be a point in the program where we're going to ask them to just share briefly what this means to them as an educator and as a principal in a building that it's going to directly impact. And I can't overstate the contribution that these two have made to this. They've done a lot of research and work on their own. They've done, we know the load that Brett's carried at his school. Stephanie's done an excellent job in preparing her school for this, and we really appreciate everyone's work on it. So with that, this is our proposal of what a digital conversion might look like in Wasatch County School District. Eric.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to do is just kind of talk about the context. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that and where this digital conversion and one-to-one and all that's kind of been talked about. I'm really glad that we did some pre-teaching with Keith beforehand, so this wasn't the first time he saw it. You know, I don't see any AEDs around or anything like that. So, okay, how we're going to start out this is kind of show you kind of the vision of where this is going with school districts in America, and just the opportunities for our students in the near future.
Thank you.
you can see the world that our kids are growing up in and the things at our fingertips are much different than maybe we experienced. And that's just some examples of the future for our students. You notice they never play video games anymore, and they're in bed on time without being told, and all those things are going to be in the future, too. So here's a quote that we found. Will Richardson was a teacher in New York and really jumped on this digital world bandwagon, is now touring the country doing lots of speaking assignments and really helping school districts and teachers kind of move. I'll give you a second to read that quote. I guess the big part with this, because of this changing environment that they're in, the question really is now is moving from not if, but to how. How do we adapt these changes in these kids' lives to make them, our students, more productive and prepared for the future they're in, and also our school system? How do we make our school system more prepared for the world that our kids are going to be living in? This is an idea we stole from one of the school districts we went to. Just as we talk about the world that our students are living in, one of the ways in which you can measure that change is through knowledge creation. And one way to measure knowledge creation is through U.S. patents. So as you can see here from the trend from 1790, when we took our first patent, to last year, I believe, yeah, you can see the change in trajectory of the number of patents. And so before, in the early days, it was really, I don't want to say easy, but it was easier for a teacher to be on the top of their game, have all the knowledge, and be ahead of their students. But as you can see now, since 1980, with personal computers coming into the homes, and that's when they started being sold at that point, at that changing point, you can see where knowledge creation is gone. And it's no longer the teacher being the wise sage on the stage. And it's really just helping students connect to all the new knowledge that's available, because it's really hard for one individual to keep on top of all that themselves. Looking at the old reality, our school system was built for the industrial age in the 1900s. And a lot has changed since then. We live in a whole new reality now with an information age and conceptual age, and some would say now even a global age when it comes to communication. And that's one thing that you saw in that one video, is really what technology helps us do is communicate faster and quicker in ways that we haven't been able to do in the past. And then we can dedicate more time to education and the things that we're really here to do. Our Utah core standards are one way that is preparing our students for that new reality, the rigor that is asked for, the higher order thinking skills and the critical thinking skills that are inherent in those new Utah core standards are just one idea of the environment change that our students are currently in as far as implementation. That focus on career and college readiness is huge with our students. And what does that career and college readiness look like? Is that the same as it was for us as we were going to school? No, it's a much different world that they're in. The jobs that are being created are much different than what we knew. Also with that comes, with this technology, increased competition. We have our own online school, and that presentation came to you a couple weeks ago, and you can see that we're really fitting a niche that we weren't able to fit before. And as you can see, you're probably hearing the radio and seeing the TV, the K-12, Connections Academy, all these different groups now are competing with public education, the traditional, that's never been there before. And then the other advantage that a learning system has in this type of thing, and you saw that in the video also, is just this opportunity for us to extend the day with no additional, you know, major changes in our schedule, and also extend the school year, which both things we know help students. Okay. It's our time when we're on chat.
So a couple things that I want to mention is first of all, a lot of the things that we're going to show you as far as digital curriculum goes, they may be happening somewhere in our district already. There are some real bright spots, and with some of the things that we've already accomplished at TIS and and you can go throughout our district and you can find these things in spots. We took a group of people into Matthew Zernberg's science classroom the other day, and he's working with a new instructional strategy called the flipped classroom, where he puts a video of himself giving a lecture up on a platform, a learning platform, which would be Canvas, which is used at a lot of our universities here in the state. The students go into their individualized module on Canvas. They click on a video of him teaching a lesson or an objective. So then the students come to the classroom, and they're ready to do more in-depth learning because the lecture part's already taken place, and the actual hands-on application science-type things that should take place in the lab and in the classroom take place there. And his kids are coming in. They're doing a lot of the teaching. They're finding stuff on a website, on somewhere else on the internet. They're coming in. They're doing the teaching to the rest of the class. As Eric kind of mentioned, the teacher no longer stands at the front of the classroom and imparts knowledge throughout the day. The teacher is a facilitator, an expert facilitator that helps these students find the right places to go to learn and accomplish the objectives that have been set forth. So my point is, we're proposing today to systemize this, to make it district-wide. We want you to know that a lot of the things that we're showing you, you can go find them in pockets or spaces somewhere in the district already. What we'd like to do is see it work as a system in that way. So just a quote from Clayton Christensen: a key step toward making school intrinsically motivating is to customize education to match the way each child best learns. And that's what we're continually looking for, is ways to motivate students. I think most all of us had that same experience when we raced out of the university with our diploma in hand and couldn't wait to get to the local high school or the junior high or the elementary, wherever it might be, and teach the students. And I'm more of a secondary guy, but I can tell you at the secondary level, one of the deflating days of my first weeks in the classroom was all this stuff that I'm so excited to teach the students. They're not really that motivated to learn it. They want to know if it's on the test and what day we're going to take it. Motivation is a huge factor in education. And we really believe that this digital conversion will reach and enhance the intrinsic motivation that students have to learn and be involved. We have another video. It's kind of similar to the one that you saw when Eric was up here. That one was a little bit futuristic. This one is a little more specific to what a curriculum, a teacher, a day in the classroom might look like. Some of the devices are kind of over the top. You might not see some of the devices or exactly the way they've accomplished it. But this isn't too far off as to what could really happen as part of our digital conversion here in the district. I just went one slide too many. Okay. There we go. Can you guys see on top of this? Thank you.
touchscreen technology at the front of the classroom, and this video is a little bit over the top. It was the entire wall, but Carl's going to talk a little bit about that in a few minutes, and that's here, it's present. We can access that kind of technology currently, and it's doable. It would be on a much smaller scale, but that is something that's very realistic as part of this conversion. The digital printer that you saw, many of you probably know we have one at Wasatch High School, probably more sophisticated than the one you saw in the video. So these things are present. They're available. As I said, we just need to make them part of what we do on a regular basis. This is just a screenshot of a learning platform, the Canvas platform. Some of you are very familiar with this this type of learning. You've had children or Chad's experience at the university, obviously. But this really helps us to individualize learning. You may have caught this in the two videos where teacher goes in and assigns individual assignments per student, not just shotgun blast. This is the whole assignment for the class. And so there's possibility for discussion boards, individualized assignments, the syllabus is there, collaboration projects, all kinds of things are possible through individualized learning. And this is part of our presentation, is that this would be part of the digital conversion throughout the system, that we would be using something like Canvas. This is a short video on just a specific math curriculum. This is a 7th, 8th math curriculum, and this video does a pretty good job of demonstrating what it can look like. And when you team this up with the smart board or the touchscreen technology as a board in the front of the room, there's some really neat things that can happen with this Digits curriculum and others like it.
Digits combines a comprehensive math curriculum, powerful best practices in teaching, and easy-to-use technology so you can deliver personalized instruction effectively and save valuable time. The instruction is also highly interactive and allows for teaching opportunities not possible using traditional textbooks. For example, in this activity, students must find the number value of each quotient, determine its sign, and then locate the value on the number line. Instant feedback enables students who are struggling with any of these concepts to get immediate confirmation that they've correctly applied the concepts. The submit style of feedback is a format more challenging than instant feedback. Digits uses it in examples to encourage students to build their thinking by connecting related applications of a concept. In this example, students match fraction products with models in preparation for learning a general rule. They must apply their reasoning to all three models before getting confirmation. This submit format includes distractors in addition to the correct answers. Some distractors are close but not quite answers, which require students to move thoughtfully through the problem. This is the third example in a lesson connecting fractions, decimals, and percents, and it challenges students to demonstrate their understanding of the relationships among the three forms of numbers. This example provides a fun way to explore the vertical line test for determining whether a graph represents a function. Students drag the virtual pencil, a stand-in for a vertical line, across the screen and watch to see if it ever crosses the graph more than once. This example allows students to explore the construction of a triangle for given conditions. Students use the ruler to determine which toothpicks to use, and then they manipulate the protractor to set the correct angle. The teacher can lead a robust discussion about which toothpicks can and can't be used. Students can take turns manipulating the triangle to change its orientation, but eventually the class should be convinced that, no matter who is manipulating the triangle, only one toothpick can form the third side for the given conditions. Students will benefit from trying, or seeing their classmates try, the various on-screen orientations. Designed as a memory game, this vocabulary review is a fun way for students to match mathematical terms and their definitions. With topic reviews such as this one, students who lack confidence in their computation skills but excel with conceptual parts of math may feel ready to take a turn at the screen. These engaging interactivities are just one of the reasons why Pearson is so proud to introduce Digits.
This graph demonstrates a concept that Eric touched on earlier, and that's extending the school day. One thing that a digital conversion does is it gives students and teachers 24/7 access to the curriculum. So this graph comes from Huntsville City Schools, who did an entire digital conversion, and this is 7th and 8th grade math. And you'll see on the graph, along the bottom represents the hours of the day, and it's the full 24 hours of the day. And then up this side is the number of times students get on and access the curriculum. So the black lines are within the school day. You can see that many students get up and start as early as 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, and 7 in the morning working on their math. Go throughout the school day. This is 3 o'clock here. So this goes clear into the 9 and 10 o'clock hour of students continuing to work on their math. So just an illustration of how this gives complete open access to the curriculum to students and their parents 24/7. We think that the digital conversion is kind of the missing link in the triangle of the new Utah core, which is higher order thinking, more in-depth learning, computer adaptive testing. Lots been made about our state contract with AIR and how the kids will now take their tests. The digital interactive curriculum is that piece that's needed to bridge that gap. As you watched the manipulation of the Digits curriculum, where the drag and click of the different things, that's what the test will look like with AIR. And if our kids are taking tests on paper with a pencil, if they're doing their work on paper and a pencil and then taking a test that way, puts them at a disadvantage. We think this really makes that three-legged stool complete and strengthens our overall learning in the district. Now, this last part that we're going to go into is more the plan, what we would like to propose to you as a plan moving forward. Before we do that, in our research, we did find some instances where we're going to have a hard time going paperless. So we wanted to just show you maybe one instance where we're probably going to have to continue with. Continue with paper use.
Emma. 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 Emma.
So, we needed to have a little laughter and lighten it up before we get into the details here, I guess. This is our proposal, and of course it can be manipulated one way or the other, but our proposal is we need to move forward faster rather than slower. One school district that we visited did a K-12 rollout in 1 year. Their digital conversion was bam, all at once. We're not proposing that. We think that we've already started some steps, and we want to add some steps that we think make sense. But it is speeding the program up substantially from what I think was originally envisioned. 3 years, we're proposing that this first year, which would be next school year, we increase our curriculum and support at TIS, and we do a full implementation at Rocky Mountain Middle. That would be 7th and 8th grade. Year 2, we would do a full implementation at Wasatch High School, 9 through 12, and then we would follow up with the younger grades, K-4, on year 3. Can I
go ahead, Paul? On that year 1, where we're on the one-to-one thing, all we're doing is adding the 8th grade.
That's right.
The 7th will already be there.
That's exactly right. It was originally planned to do 7th. This would just be adding 1 year. And as you know, you get into a secondary setting, even at Rocky Mountain Middle, and there is a lot of crossover. It's not every grade, every classroom is not just a 7th grade classroom.
Most of the teachers actually go 7th and 8th grade.
So maybe you can speak to that a little bit when we get to that. So that's our proposal on the...
There's questions about what the proposal is here.
No, I'm just stating that move to go full implementation at Rocky Mountain helps take the blow off the next year, because those kids coming up, then your 9th grade's already assimilated in. Your teachers aren't, but your kids are. So then you're just doing 10, 11, 12 the second year at the high school because you hit the 9th grade that year. So it's better to bite 2 years out because you're getting 3 years the next year anyway. But 4 years of teachers.
That's right.
Mark? As far as making it for the students, have you looked at, maybe you're going to get to this, implementing it for the parents and educating the parents on this? When we were at the national, a number of districts presented on this, and you may have already looked at it, but the one thing that they all did was spend a considerable amount of time educating the public. Mm-hmm. And just in the questions, just as I'm a new board member, mm-hmm. but since I've been on, I've had people approach me about the one-to-one, mm-hmm. People who have not embraced technology and kind of questioned the motive and whether that was a toy and everything else. And it seems that the ones that were successful spent a considerable amount of time putting things out for parents to do that, but they didn't do it necessarily sending pamphlets home. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's a great time to educate the public now and drive them to social media or drive them to videos like you're showing us, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So,
that's a great point, and we found that to be the case in our travels, in our research. Really what we found in communities, some communities that are maybe not as progressive as ours, what folks told us is once you start this conversion, if you don't move fast enough, your parents will push you to move faster. And a part of that is the education piece that you're talking about, Mark. We don't have a lot in our proposal today about that, but we know that it's very important. It's very important that we work not only with the parents but the entire community. One thing that we know from our own experience and from others is some of these homes, as we send a computer home, that will be the only computer in their house. And it will open up a window of learning for the entire family. I mean, Brett can tell stories about, you know, computer doesn't show up at school that day. Well, Mom needed it because she was applying for a job and she kept it home that day, or similar stories.
What about access?
Yeah.
For those homes.
We're going to talk a little bit about that. Brett's going to talk a little bit about that. He just completed a survey, and I'll let him report on that. It's better than we thought.
It's a great question.
One thing that some of the communities have done that have gone this way, they've worked with businesses to provide hot spots. And it's kind of turned into not just a school district thing. Wasatch County is a digital county. Wasatch County is a community that believes in technology. And all of the businesses up and down Main Street are inviting students into their into their parlors, into their foyers to do their homework and providing hotspots for them. We see that as part of this. We see us teaming with Wasatch County and maybe something at the rec center. And
we already have the permission from the county to put our access points up. And we already have fiber to all their buildings to do that right now.
So, yes, we envision this as a community thing, and educating the parents as much as we can face-to-face would be part of our plan.
One thing just along the same lines, it seemed to go hand-in-hand with social media.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've talked to the board a little bit about making more of a social media presence, and it seems like that could reach a lot more people. I think it goes right in line with the number of people who are logging in to do math or whatever after school, people who can't make the meetings for a digital conversion like we had for dual immersion, stuff like that. Social media was a great way, and all those districts used it. Are we set up right now to go out social media-wise and have a campaign for social media at the same time? It seems like it would go hand in hand.
Carl can talk about that. We've been discussing it. But Carl?
We've discussed it for quite a number of years. We have accounts set up. Our problem is we've never had a person in place in order to man that. We haven't had the resource in order to do that. So that's our...
I totally agree. It's part of a larger, comprehensive culture. A big part of PLCs is teacher collaboration. And when we implemented PLCs, there's this 1 hour in the week that we have a formal collaboration meeting. But what we found in our schools and what we is that the culture of collaboration took root and traveled all over in everything that we did. It became part of it was woven into the fabric of our practices on a daily basis. And we think this will be the same thing, that the social media, the way the board functions, the way the district office functions, the way our PTA functions, that we all start thinking digital. We all start thinking paperless. We all start thinking, how can we do this more efficiently and reach more people I think your social media question is an example of one piece of that.
Let me speak to that for just a minute. Early on, as the social media was becoming more popular, there was a lot of discussion with superintendents and the State Office of Education about social media, but the legal side of the USOE kept throwing red flags about access and the problems with access because of the way the technology was set up.
Right.
And so that slowed us down, Mark, dramatically. But the technology, Facebook itself, Pinterest, Twitter, they're all different today than what they were 2 years ago and 3 years ago. And those kinds of concerns seem to be less. And so you see some school districts, like you saw at the conference in January, and other school districts across the nation now jumping in full bore. But that's part of the reason why we delayed previously is because, frankly, the legal department of USOE was saying, you better develop a policy, and frankly, we're discouraging it.
Yeah, for about 2 years, they put the brakes on us. They said, wait, you know, don't put anything until we have full policy in place. You know, they really held us back, you know, quite frankly, on this. And then all of a sudden, they just... open the floodgates.
Yeah. So that's kind
well,
of
well, they demand it. We have an online school.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I was so impressed with our two staff members that are currently doing that. We had that presentation at the last meeting. They're doing it like bros, you know?
Yeah.
So we have the abilities and the capabilities,
exactly.
Obviously. We're doing it.
And
so
we actually
have
experiments of using social media going on. I had a principal in my office today asking, can I use Twitter? I said, get with Carl, make sure we have certain things set up. I'd like to see us do more of this in an effort to actually do what you're talking about as we work on developing policy around it. It's an important thing that needs to happen.
Well, I think what Mark's saying is, as we go down this road,
let's not forget this.
Let's have that social media help us to educate the community, educate the parents, and also help with things we wanted to do in our district with getting our story out. I have one more question before it has something to do with something else.
Yeah, I was just going to make a comment, and I can't pull the article up from there. It had some good things, but one of the classes I attended was Bring Your Own Device, and this school district was much larger. Did you know that with me? It was a much larger school. They had 70,000
kids.
Yeah. It was huge in Chicago, and their community had embraced this as well, and to the point that many businesses sponsored the program and actually bought
devices
for all the ones that didn't have them or that the district couldn't afford. And I think sometimes we forget that maybe we have, I don't know if it's legal to do that the way our funding is, but if we can use the county and use the who's the guys that the go and have lunch together, all the Rotary Club and the chamber, it's just benefited all of that in the town.
And that went to my question is, because I went to some classes also that talked about how many of our students have smartphones now. And maybe you'll get to this too, but utilizing...
Using the technology.
The ones that they already have.
Already have it, utilizing that in the classroom as opposed to providing a device for every student.
These are my feelings on it. I think the committee feels the same way. There are school districts bring your own device and trying to use their smartphones. I think there's a real problem. If we really believe in the foundational concepts of BYU partnership, one being access to knowledge, I struggle with bring your own device because, number one, a lot of the devices don't have a keyboard, and number two, the devices are going to be much different depending on your level of income and your level of support from a family. One of the best things I ever did for my own students is when they got into John Moss's class, I bought them a MacBook Pro. And my college student still has hers, and she's been able to do a lot of cool things outside of the curriculum with that. So my fear of bring your own device, and I think as a committee we kind of jumped over that and moved on from it, is that some kids will have one of these, and another kid will have a little tiny phone without a keyboard that they're trying to write a research paper on, which they can't. And so the districts that we visited, the districts that are listed, Stephanie did some work with some research with the National One-to-One Institute. They put us on to one of the districts we went to visit. And what they say is, in the districts we visited, they're committed to make sure that everyone has the same access to the curriculum by having an appropriate device, every student. And I feel really strongly about that. I think I'm
speaking. Carl's going to talk about devices and the concepts of BYOD that we've already tried to implement here in the school district when he gets to his portion of this.
We're getting ahead of ourselves, and we need to wait.
let us finish. Let these guys talk.
And great question. I'm glad you're bringing them up.
Good stuff. So anyway, okay.
Resources. There is a slide on each one of these, so I won't. I'll just show you the list. Digital curriculum, the actual curriculum itself, job embedded professional development, one-to-one device for every student, and digital friendly classrooms. Those are the resources needed to really do a full digital conversion.
You'll probably maybe get to this too, so tell me if you will. But teacher training, how does
We'll get to that's number two, and we'll talk about that. The curriculum. There is digital curriculum. We have some of this in our school. You know that some of the programs, Envision Math has a digital side. The 7-8 math we're using this year has a digital side. There's stuff out there. In the past, we've given teachers options to use the textbook or use the curriculum. Or use the curriculum a little bit when you want to. We've kind of dipped our toe in the water with it. So some of it's already present, but what we are proposing is a full digital conversion of the four core areas. And the four core area curriculum is available in quality products in digital form. And so we're proposing in the timeline that we've laid out that we do core plus other that is available and makes sense.
And that means no textbooks.
Well, what does that look like for our math core that we've just given praises and accolades to?
Well, you know,
the development of meeting the standards and aligning.
It makes it much more flexible, and it makes it much more. I'll tell you, the digital stuff that's becoming available is much more up to date than any textbook we might have, and they can update it as you go.
So they align this totally to the new core standards.
Well,
the new, or is it a process as well?
The new digital curriculum is totally aligned. The only trick we have is in the high school we have a little bit of a. We're gonna have to handle this in the right way because Utah adopted the integrated core. So we're teaching a little bit of.
Theirs is different than another common core. Ours is different.
Ours is integrated. So we teach secondary 1, 2, and 3. A lot of the rest of the country still doing algebra, geometry, algebra 2. And our teachers have written a lot of their own curriculum.
So we would
be looking at ways to digitize some of their own stuff that they've written. And we think we could get some help from some companies to do that. This is going to help us move forward with the Common Core much better than the textbooks now sitting in our schools. It's going to move us forward much more quickly and line us up much better than what we have.
I envision our teachers still obviously collaborating and using their PLCs, but on a digital basis to write.
That's exactly right.
I don't want to say write the curriculum, but to implement the curriculum instead of the way we're doing it.
Everything, let me just put it this way, Debbie. Everything that our teachers need to teach as it relates to the Utah core is currently available on the internet digitally. But we're talking about some other coordinated curriculums too that could help make those things.
Practices.
Yes. To make it actually enhance the learning processes.
Job embedded professional development. This is one of those money items that Keith was referring to. One thing that we cannot do, and I think as we move forward with the full digital rollout, we have to have job embedded professional development. Sending teachers to a week-long training or a two-day training and then having them come back and just do this, that's not how it works. That's not how, even though we've talked with districts that are all over the map in areas of digital conversion, the successful ones have one central characteristic, and that is they have people that are full-time in the buildings helping teams and individual teachers learn what they need to learn to function digitally. And so we're talking about a digital curriculum integrationist for each school to start with. That would mean one at TIS, that would mean one at Rocky Mountain Middle. As it moves up the ladder, there could be some combining. As teachers get trained and start working this way and become more efficient, maybe when in year two as we go to the high school, maybe there can be some combining at the two middle level schools. We don't know. But this is a very important piece. We would be scared to go down this road without it. In fact, we would suggest that we don't. We'd say either we do it with this or else we don't do it at all. So there's lots of different ways to go ahead, Keith.
They'd obviously be housed at the school, I think.
They would. They would be housed at the school, and we would work in conjunction with the principal, but they would work closely with Eric and I as far as to their assignments, what they're doing. They would also work very closely with the building level administrators.
Mark, the professional development that's already in place, the times we have set aside, is that ample enough if we went digital conversion? It seems like a lot of the districts that were at the national convention put more in
This would be every day. This would be, this person would live in the, at the school. On Tuesday morning, she would be in math classrooms, or he. And she would be sitting hand in hand with each teacher saying, this is how you implement this.
Or else modeling, too.
Or modeling. I mean, there's a whole myriad of things, of ways they can do it. But it would not be specific to, those are days you can bring everybody together and you can hit some big nuggets and talk about some overarching concepts. But the details of it would take place in a very team and individual structure-like, and that person would be there teaching, helping every day in the classroom in the school.
And that's what we mean by job embedded.
Okay. And I would think, Mark, some of those comments you may have gotten from other constituents are maybe because they have a teacher who is not converted digitally and is using that netbook as a toy. My daughter's experience is totally different. She has a teacher who literally is extending the school day by having her do projects at night on her netbook. That's why that type of thing is so important.
See, I don't foresee us getting the pushback from the public near as much as from the staff. And this is why, is because it's like they haven't been taught how to teach this way. And it's their fear. It's just like when you first came out with SIS, how many years did it take to get people, and they still don't update their SIS. You know what I'm saying? And it's not that they don't want to teach this new way. It's not that they don't want to give it to the kids. It's we cannot professionally develop them to the point they're technologically disadvantaged, which is what
the
that's
kids,
me.
The kids are already more advanced.
Yeah, the kids are ahead of them, and I think it's their fear, and I think that's where our pushback is going to be, is because they're going to be like, oh, they want to do this, you know, and then the kids will get, I mean, that's where the negative comes from. It's not coming from our community. I don't believe it's coming from the parents. It's coming from the parents of the kids, like you're saying, who have a frustrated teacher. So I think as we move forward, this is probably going to be the biggest piece of whether this is successful or not. It's who we get to help them every single day in the classroom. Who we get, I guess you guys will help lay out what the curriculum is or help choose the curriculum, but it's how do I as a teacher go home now tomorrow, I got to go home and find something for tomorrow. I mean, it's the mapping and the curriculum, it's the day-to-day that's going to be our biggest challenge. And so the way we support this, in my mind, is whether this flies or fails.
And I was looking at that video with the board and the teachers up there, and I turned to Mark and said, I'd love to be a teacher. I mean, how
I'd love to be a kid. I want to go back to school and have it,
you know what I
talk
mean,
to me that way. Yeah,
I would hope, and I agree 100% with what you're saying.
Yeah, I think
but
this
I would
is
hope
our
they
biggest
embrace
piece.
This and think, man, this is gonna be fun.
I'll tell you what. Yeah. At my home, on a Monday evening or a Sunday evening, we're still sitting around the family room, but everyone's plugged in. And we're kind of planning the week and who's going to do what. I have four teenagers and two little boys, second and third grade. And, you know, one teenager's on a mission and one's at college, but she's still home on occasion. And as we're sitting around the family room and there's iPads, there's iPhones, there's laptops, there's all these digital devices. And we're on them, and we're reading our emails, and we're looking at stuff on the internet, and we're looking at KSL.com and seeing what the latest buy is or whatever.
Sounds like a normal family.
We have those things, and these two little boys that are in second, third grade, and keep in mind, you guys know me well and my family. We're not digital. We're not digital. I was going to say freaks, but I'm not sure if that's the
it's
right
geeks
word.
That you want to say.
Geeks. We're not digital geeks. We have a farm and we have horses and tractors and four wheelers.
They're hicks.
You know, we just got the hogs in for the fair last week, and so we're not a family that's you know totally wired. But that's the scene at my house, and the point of that I'm trying to make with that scene is the two little boys are the only kids that don't own a device. But anytime somebody lays down a phone,
every time I lay my phone down, it has a new game loaded on. And anytime someone lays down an iPad, those little boys grab it up and they're on it, and they're sliding, they're doing stuff. They are digital natives. Todd Johnson talks about his 2-year-old son. Before he could speak, he could slide and open the iPad, and he could point to this and that. Some of you have told me stories about that in your own homes. Jim shared a story with us the other day about his 4-year-old daughter that was looking on the iPad and says, "Dad, what about this dolphin or a whale? I can't remember." And she, well, he said the horse, but before it was a dolphin. Yeah, Do you want to tell that story? Why don't you tell that story?
Well, we were watching conference as a family, and she was coloring on a coloring app, because we don't color anymore. We do coloring apps. And so she's coloring, and it started with a horse.
Next thing, you're not going to want to teach cursing.
They don't use toilet paper at their house either.
So. Their device.
Anyway, she's coloring a horse, and she says, "Dad, what color are the horse's eyes?" And so I said, "Well, Google it," which is now a term. She, 4 years old, she knows this. So she goes to the Google app, and I have to help her spell the word horse. She clicks on images and sees hundreds of images of horses. And so the next picture she's coloring is a princess riding a dolphin. And so then she says, "What color is a dolphin's eyes?" Well, Google it. And so then she gets in this thing, and so she spends the rest of that time Googling different animals and comes to me with the conclusion, all animals' eyes are black. Why is that? And so, you know, for me, the struggle, and we have some other people at the building level here, the struggle teachers have in a PLC is the third and fourth essential question, which is, what do I do with those who don't know it yet, and what do I do with those who do and need an enriched experience? We don't have good answers for that because they're hard to do with the resources. To me, a digital conversion is the answer to those two questions, because we can tailor things to remediation and to extension in a much easier way than we can with a textbook and a handout.
So my point to the story is those two little boys at my house, Jim's 4-year-old daughter, when they show up to our school system, are we going to hand them one of these, or are we going to hand them one of these? And I think we have a responsibility to get with the program. The superintendent in Huntsville told us, he was an ex-military guy and was a technology specialist in the military, and he said, "Folks, the military, most business, industry, everyone is doing a digital conversion, and we, as the institution that is supposed to be preparing these kids to go out and be successful in those areas, we better step it up, and we better train them appropriately and in the appropriate way." And I think that's I think that's where we're at. We're going to turn some time over to Carl, and then I know these guys have been chomping at the bit to say stuff. You just need to shout it out. Don't wait for us. But after Carl, these guys are each going to take a few minutes and talk about what this means to their school, and then we have one last video that we're going to end with.
Is everybody okay? Do we need to walk around for a minute, or are we ready to push
take
forward?
A break for a minute?
Well, the device.
Let's take a 5-minute break. Yeah, take a break. Go use the restroom and stretch for a minute. Is that okay?
Yeah. Let me map quest where the restroom is.
It's across the hall.
Kidding.
That's what I want to hear you say.
Including the two.
I've never seen those before. Integrationist.
I'm not sure that's a real word. I think Paul made it up.
Which one?
Integrationist. In our meeting the other day, you called it a transitionalist.
Well,
I'll ask for using some different words.
Transitionalist sounds temporary, though.
Yeah, integrationist is you're there. There's actually job descriptions out there.
Everybody else was turning the heat up. It's cold. Bump it up a little. You would be fantastic. I didn't think that about it.
Drinks over here if you want one, you guys. I don't deal with mine. Want a Diet Coke or something?
No, I'm good.
You want more?
Yes. You're turning it up or down?
Yes, I am. Are you hot? Definitely, I can't feel our toes. Our feet are
freezing. No, I
probably did. They didn't turn the heat on until right before we got here, so it's like, whatever. So.
You know what? You've got to come on this side.
No, I'm
okay. Because right there, it's flowing.
Yeah, I did that house that you turned it up.
Well, I know it did.
Wherever you're at.
Some of us were thinking when we put sandals on and it's the tundra we're doing, you know?
You know what it is, Elizabeth? If the sun shines,
that's me.
What goes on the feet?
You use sandals, I know.
That's exactly right.
Sorry.
It might be 32 outside.
I have warm socks and full shoes.
Some of them are smarter than those of us that aren't.
Very much.
Thank you.
Good question about the ability to social media. We're ready to move forward.
Yeah. Like those are hands of hand.
We'll go for
it. This has for the only one it has to do. She's like, okay.
Okay. All right, you guys, let's get back.
Thank you.
Do you have service up here? Okay, it's Jill.
Yeah.
Use the mic.
Still on. To do nothing. No, I'd rather use the mic than others.
All right, Carl, whenever you're ready.
Okay.
You got to speak up so the mic picks up, okay?
Yeah, I will. When we went to these other school districts and looked at what they had, they were they had devices that were age appropriate. They showed us laptops for their older kids, and then they showed us tablets for the younger kids, particularly at Huntsville. They showed us iPads for their K through 3, and then they showed us netbooks for their middle school age kids, and then they showed us the laptops for the older kids. And when we've looked around and talked to school districts all across the country, that's what they've showed us. And as you could see in the presentations there were all kinds of different devices, and so we've been looking at the devices that are available to us, and there's all kinds of devices now. When we started originally, we didn't have a lot of choices. We had netbooks, we had iPads, and we had laptops, and those were basically what we had started with, and the netbooks were nice for us. They were economical. They were easy to get a hold of. They had some limitations to them. They weren't very powerful. They were they had smaller screen sizes. Some of them weren't very well made, and so we had we had choices to make when we originally purchased those. And so we purchased the best that we possibly could, and we were able to buy one that we were able to beef up and do good things for. But we found some really neat devices, and we wanted to show you. We found this. This, for instance, this pink ThinkPad, that's actually a convertible device. It's a laptop. It's one that we would look at for our older kids, and it's a
touchscreen.
It's a touchscreen. Uh-huh. And it will get this thing started up.
It's called a ThinkPad.
It's called a ThinkPad. Uh-huh. And it's a convertible, and it will flip around and turn into a tablet.
Wow.
And it runs Windows 8. And I don't have this one turned
here. Let us do it while you work on the others.
Get that one started. Yeah.
We'll just send them around.
It's a regular laptop, and it's called an Ultrabook. And it runs a full processor and everything else, and you can type on it, flip it around, and it's really tough, and then you can run everything.
Can you print from that?
Oh, yes.
Then you can hook it up and print from it.
Yeah,
if they
you can
want
hook
to.
It up and print from it.
Think of the application for that Ultrabook right there. It would really help with our math.
Our math.
It would also help with our art, a lot of other application-type classes.
When you said you've looked around, and maybe you will say this as well, but could you just do quickly, I know where you went, but was it the two places and the two schools you
Those
primarily were impressed with, and did they have this type of digital learning going on there?
Yes, uh-huh.
On both of those places.
Okay. They did.
And when you said Huntsman, is that Utah?
From different approaches, uh-huh.
When you said Huntsman, is that Utah?
No, Huntsville.
Huntsville. Alabama.
Oh, okay.
Alabama.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
I'm wondering if they were the ones that I went to their conference at Nationals.
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Because
they were from Alabama, and it was a little skinny black guy. And he was very, very military. So when he said that, I'm like, ooh, that's the same presenter that I saw.
No,
I have to get his name. Maybe
it
not.
Could be. There's another district that's kind of leading the charge. Mooresville.
They did. That's who I went to. I went to Mooresville. And we were like in love with
Mooresville. Mooresville's a little bit different. I've actually talked to some people at Mooresville. Mooresville uses MacBooks. They use MacBook Airs.
Okay.
And have used the MacBook Pros from in the past. This is one. This is actually a tablet from Acer. And it comes apart. These guys have got one, and they've been playing with them.
And the thing with, you know what, like when we first got them, I was so nervous.
See, these things come apart.
When you guys first gave us even the iPad.
Well, this comes apart. That scared me to death, but it works still.
Yeah.
And I'll post that
one. I always admit to Carl, I'm his technologically disadvantaged one. I'm a mess.
I can hand it to my 3-year-old.
This one here is one that's separate. It doesn't.
They're resilient, aren't they?
They're very resilient. This is one that we're looking at. This is an age-appropriate device too for our elementary schools that we're looking at. This is a Lenovo tablet.
And you just put one of the tough cases on the outside because the ones with the little kids that we've seen in the presentations at Nationals and State have your destructible.
They have tough cases that fit around these things, and you can drop them. They work very well. These all have Windows 8 on them.
I thought that was part of the presentation.
What's that?
The dropping.
Yeah, the dropping. I dropped one the other day. But these have Windows 8 on them. One of the differences between Windows 8 and the iPads is they have enterprise-level management for us, which is very important for us is because we can manage larger groups of these things than we can with, like, an Apple. An Apple is a consumer device, and Apples are very difficult for us to work with.
Can I give an example of that? What we talked about. So my teachers went to USET, which is our state technology training, and then they came back with all these great ideas about how to use their iPad in their classroom. And multiple teachers went to the same training. So all the kids wanted to use this one app. And because Apple is not user-friendly, it won't allow Carl to take an app, push it out so the kids can all use it and have one sign in, log in, and use
it.
So every time a different teacher, so that's seven teachers, and those different kids want to be in seven different classes, they will have to remember seven logins and seven passwords. So they're just
not. It's not practical.
It
would.
Managing becomes problems and filtering is just all.
Okay, so the security, it goes through our system, so we don't worry about.
We
can handle that. We can track it. We can ding who we need to ding.
Yep.
I hate that, but it's reality.
And we already have
the
things
safe.
In place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
so this one would be like elementary. The keys are like bigger, aren't they?
Okay, this is probably a really dumb question, but I don't know the answer. So as Windows advances, I know, like in the company I work for, it like takes forever. I have Windows 7, but some people are on something else.
Right.
As they advance, what licensing for all the
we are already set up with Microsoft as what's
provider.
Called an ETT licensee, and we can move from Windows 7 to Windows 8 on any of our platforms with no problem.
And as a
at
district,
all.
Do we try to always stay?
We stay current.
Current with whatever we got.
Yep. So it's no problem whatsoever for us to move.
And so as we move programs, not only we're talking about just Windows 8 now,
right.
But of all the other apps, and as the upgrades are happening,
do
teachers
we
grasp the change easily, or is it a lot of training with each?
That's one of the things we need an integrationist. We need that school level professional development person to be able to help them roll along with those things.
I mean, with the advances of technology, I don't know how you stay current on anything.
It's very difficult for us to do that.
Do you think that's an impossible task?
It's not impossible.
So let me hear what you think about that. Anyone?
I think the bigger issue when it comes to keeping up to speed is the initial curve to get to a level.
Fujitsu.
The changes that come after you get to a point They're incremental.
So that's
they're a curve, but it's fairly shallow.
So we're
but to get some
now,
people who are afraid of these things that don't touch it, that never use them, and I've got teachers in my building, right? Their curve is that way. But for the rest of them, that's the easy part. It's not as challenging once we get them to a level.
So
our issue is getting them to that level.
Where are they? Most of the teachers, Ann talked about it, and I think it's right. Are they most?
I think the spectrum goes the whole way.
Yeah. But is it really more broad at the bottom than at the top, or are we
probably a good bell
all
curve
along the way?
Well, and
good
I wanted to kind of address what you were talking a little bit about.
This is,
we had
these are the two latest netbooks, too. This is a real tough one.
Okay.
They probably saw
durable.
Durable.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Steph.
Well, we talked about, I had the kids' time of knowing since last spring that this was coming to our school. And so with that, we were able to address it with our staff. And we had a meeting at the beginning of the year and said, we're going to be asking you to do some very difficult things this next year. But you need to understand, if you don't take this year to kind of get up to speed, you're going to have a 12-year-old come into your classroom next year and tell you how to do it. So that kind of...
You were brutally honest.
Yeah,
thank
we
you.
Just said, so let's deal with this now. But then, so we created a technology team with the idea of saying, now, if we're going to be trustworthy, you need to trust us. And so you need to be honest with your skills. If you don't know how to attach a document to an email, we need to know that. And so we provided surveys for our staff, and we said, all we ask is for your honesty. If you're honest, we will help you. So our technology team created surveys, and then based on the surveys, we wanted to model what technology can do, and the purpose of technology is to differentiate and meet the needs of kids. So we told our technology team, we need you to differentiate and meet the needs of our teachers. And so their job every month was to put out a survey and ask, what do you need? Here's the prerequisites before you even get the first training. If you check anything on that, you will go to the prerequisite training. If you don't know that, the next level is this. So every month, we provided that training with the
idea.
So
you've already provided that for all of the
this last year.
Interviews.
Now, the next piece was like you were speaking to the public about how do we bring the public in. I hope Shad and Jim can talk to this a little bit. We wanted, number one, for our teachers to learn to communicate digitally. So we said, we understand the newsletters, okay? Let's stop the newsletters that are paper. Let's do it electronically. You need to have all assignments up on your websites. Your websites all need to be up. You need to, we had Carl come in and do a training for all of our teachers. And we said by January, every single teacher has their website up. We gave them a rubric. We told them that if you aren't ready to go with the rubric, a teacher or one of our technology people will come help you.
If you don't know how to do this, let us know. We're
right. And so every one of our teachers has an up and running website. Every one of our teachers has their assignments on that website. And every one of our students can access those assignments on that website. So we're trying to communicate digitally this whole past year. We sent out information to the parents to tell them that was happening. And so through smaller chunks of information throughout the year, through differentiating for our teachers, we're trying to move along at their level with the idea of at the end of this year,
they should become proficient at that.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
and
always
how is it, has it been okay? Or is it?
It really has. I mean, I've had some veteran teachers who were very nervous, and maybe at the end they were still at that low-level training, but when they had their websites up and running and had pictures on it and, you know, could be interactive and knew how to do that without help, they felt really good about themselves. They felt honored, and nobody made fun of them for not understanding something.
Yeah.
So
okay.
As long as we're trustworthy.
You talked about your technology team, so... and I know when I was did Wasatch Associates last year, Adam's wife, Jamie was kind of oatmeal. Does every school kind of have that in place as a technology? So are you
not at
when
all
you,
the same capacity,
but they're not
okay.
The same.
Well,
level.
So
the same
or
focus
so when we're
same,
talking,
think,
okay.
Right.
So when we're talking about, I just want to be clear about the technology person that we're talking about meeting. Do you feel like you already have that person that's able to go, or are we talking about new people added positions in each of schools for that?
Well, the people they're using are people already have different assignments already in the school.
They're talking about additional people, but whether we have to hire more people or we just
replace
people that we have with someone else,
that's
and that becomes our
that's
decision.
What I'm asking.
You just have to look at it on a case-by-case basis.
Depending
if
on where
somebody
where
in
they
the school
are.
That is really good at that. But we're going to want these folks to be trained by the digital companies that's providing us with the
curriculum.
The curriculum. So once we get these people hired, if we go this route, is we would send them off for some summertime training, and they would spend some of their job learning what they need to learn to convey to the others. But as far as personnel, it's probably too early to talk about that, but it's, we would find good people to do it.
So would you suggest so every school needs to start doing what Stephanie did for next year. We need to be implementing those kinds of trainings, and that we need to be bringing all of our teachers up on technology. We need to have in-services and stuff all the time so that they get those basic skills, like you said, those websites and stuff and attaching it, a document and stuff. Those are more basic than what they're going to need to finesse a lesson.
Exactly.
You've already addressed the idea of how they've been teaching for 20 years.
It doesn't work. It's not how kids learn.
It's a major, major shift.
It's a major shift.
And for some, they make that a little easier than others. But it's a mindset difference. It's an approach difference. It's a differentiation. All that stuff comes into play and looks very different than what they've done.
What they will find out, though, is just like some of the naysayers to the PLC concept, is once you embrace this and you learn it, and now all of a sudden you have this group of people helping you plan your lessons and your tests and all that, it's less time intensive. It's easier. It's just like putting your grades in an old red grade book with a pen and a calculator. I did that when I was first teaching, and now you just throw them in and the computer does it all for you. It's a time saver, and this will have that same effect.
Are
we going to teach them cursive writing?
We're not debating that today.
So let's go back to Carl if we can and move this.
But like you saw all these devices there. What we're looking at is we're looking at age-appropriate devices for all of these kids. We're looking at tablets for the younger kids for our K through the fourth grade. And for our fifth through eighth grade, we're looking at the netbook type of devices. Some of these devices now are coming out with the touch screens on them, so we'll be looking at moving from the current netbooks that we have, and as we roll along, we'll be looking at moving to that touch screen on a netbook size device or the tablet that comes apart. And then at the high school age, we're looking at that Ultrabook that you saw there, that Lenovo type. Those are all coming into play. What we're finding right now is we have to get into the cycle of the buying. It takes, time to go out for bid. We have to get through all of that. It all takes a lot of time for us to get through. It's a process that we have to go through. We have to make sure that it fits within our systems and make sure that we can enterprise manage them, and that we also are able to roll them out and get them, into the schools and make them work with what we've got.
Are all the devices such that the students take them home, or the lowers? Are they just
what we found that when we and in fact what I've found from most of the schools that I've talked to is the kids down in the elementary schools from fourth grade on down, we keep those devices at the schools, and then from the fifth grade on up, we send those home with them. It doesn't make a lot of sense to send those devices home with a first grader or a kindergartner. And even down at the first grade and kindergarten level, we might not need them on a one-to-one basis. We might need them on a 3-to-1 or a 2-to-1, in that range. We don't quite need them, at that level of in a classroom. A 1-to-1 might not need to be there. We might not need that.
Five classrooms sharing one.
Carl, when you're ready, if you hit that
switch,
like you to talk about classrooms as well.
Yes, one of the things that we're looking at also is you saw those interactive whiteboards, where they went up and
they basically looked like this.
Mm-hmm. Touched them, uh-huh. And the technology is coming around now that we can go and retrofit a lot of our projectors and screens
that we already have.
With technology that we can put it up on the whiteboards and just add technology to what we have to turn them into interactive whiteboards. And also, the technology is coming out where we can add flat panels that have interactive technology in them into classrooms where we don't have them. So we've got a mix of technologies that we can add to what we currently have. And so that's what we're going to be looking at doing in our classrooms, is adding those particular technologies in there. So that will be a big boom for us. So that's one of the things that we'll be looking to do in our classrooms.
Any other questions about the types of devices? I think we've spent a fair amount of time. Let's go back to Paul to finish this up then. And we can move on to...
Okay. One thing I'd like to mention, and then we're going to turn some time over to Brett and Stephanie. First of all, as far as devices, digital-friendly classrooms, we're fortunate. I know this gets said a lot in the district, but when we went out to other districts, a couple things became very apparent. One is we have a fiber digital backbone in our school district, and people in other districts salivate over that. We have a guy that's up to speed on devices, and as we look at the devices around the country and we get home and Carl brings devices, we're in good hands there. We're going to end up with really good stuff, and a lot of these discussions we had, I think they were asking him questions by the time we left.
Sure.
So, we're in good hands there, and we're going to come up with something that works. Any change is messy. We had a big quote we used at Wasatch High School, and I'm not going to try and quote it because I can't remember it exactly, but it talked about how change is messy and you have to deal with the mess if you want to change. This change is going to be messy. There are going to be people that approach you as board members and wonder what in the world we're doing, because it's going to force people, even more so than I think PLCs did, to change their practice. And there's going to be some really uncomfortable teachers at first. But I will tell you, as this has kind of leaked out a little bit, and as we presented it to the principals yesterday, the level of excitement that this creates from our leaders and our best teachers and our outstanding principals it's really been fun to watch. And this is the right thing to do, and I think we're going to get there, and I think we're poised and ready to go. And in one way is with our technology. Some of the things that Huntsville City Schools had to do, they talked about their monthly internet bill, which we turned to Carl and said, what's that going to cost us? And he said, zero. They were paying $50,000 a month. They're a much bigger school district than we are, just for their internet services. Pedagogy. We were in a lot of classrooms in Alabama and in Kent, Washington. And there's no question, the team walked out of both of those districts saying the level of teaching we have in Wasatch County is far superior to what they have here. The expertise, the pedagogical training that's gone on primarily through our PLC work and working together, the Marzano stuff that we've done, this district is more ready for a digital conversion than either one of the districts we visited. By far, I think it's going to plug in, and it's going to go very rapidly, and it's going to be really quite smooth. But we are going to have to deal with that messy part as well, and that's something we're just going to have the stomach for and move forward. But with that, I'll turn the time over. Stephanie, why don't you go first, and then Brett, and then we'll have a video to end up with.
I wrote a couple notes down just of some of the questions that you guys had asked. I wanted to make sure they got addressed. And I think this goes back to something that the superintendent has said in the past about making sure that our teachers go out and we're our best storytellers. If our teachers go out and say something's awesome, usually our public believes it. And so that's why the technology team, I have to give them a lot of credit at our school this year. They've really worked hard on telling our teachers, we believe you come to school every day wanting to do your best. We honor you. We know that you want to do your best, but please honor us enough to tell us what you can't do. And if we can build that trust relationship, then we can help. And we have fabulous teachers at our school that are very tech savvy who can help those. But then those that aren't very tech savvy have something very, you know, phenomenal to offer on the instructional side. So we can create a good partnership there. So I think you're very right, but we have to have our teachers going out and telling our positive story. And I think it's all in how we approach that. If we treat them like they're inferior, they'll feel inferior. So we've tried to avoid that this year. The biggest thing that I see as a principal and from the leadership standpoint is to tie this to the PLC process. If we're saying that every department has the 10 essential skills that we're promising every kid walks through our building leaving with, then we need to be able to individualize instruction. And I want my teachers to spend less time looking for just that one math lesson. Did you see the toothpicks, the protractors, and the rulers? If a teacher doesn't, just think about the time. When you have 30 kids and you have to reset it at my school every single, when you don't have to do that and you have digital curriculum to do that, think of the time that they can switch from spending it there to individualizing education. And so the digital content excites me for the fact that we can really work on true differentiated instruction. And I'm talking about no longer will a teacher hand out one piece of paper and this is your information base. Teachers will learn to differentiate out. Kids will learn to differentiate back. And it could be either by ability or even learning styles. Maybe a student wants to create a documentary. Maybe a student wants to, you know, do a paper, a video, whatever. It gives us options. So I'm very excited about that as a teacher. And our biggest thing this year, we've spent our time trying to model what we want from our teachers. So if we differentiate for you and honor you, please differentiate for our students and honor them. And so that's kind of the approach we've taken. And for the most part, I mean, I did have a teacher come up to the other day and she goes, I'm an idiot. I'm like, you're not an idiot. You're not an idiot. It's just that you don't quite understand. I had another teacher who was kind of very opposed to this come to me and say, I used to sit right before CRTs, create an entire PowerPoint of all the vocabulary the kids needed to do. And she goes, this year, my team encouraged me to have each child take a vocabulary term, create their one PowerPoint slide. I combined them all, and then the kids taught each other. And she said, and I loved it. And I said, and there's two things that we've really talked about. Number one, I've always asked the teachers, what's your purpose? Make sure your purpose is tied to those essential skills in differentiating. And then also, who's doing the work? You shouldn't be the sage on the stage. And so she came back and she goes, I hit both of those. She goes, I knew my purpose and I was not the sage on the stage. The kids were doing it. She was so excited and I was very happy about that. You guys are falling apart. And
it's okay. It's
okay. He needs
my
group.
He just
got 6.8 guy over
there. Yeah, that's a long
way. It's okay.
And I think those are kind of the things I wanted to address, just to maybe help you understand how what we're trying to do. And there's things I wish, in hindsight, we'd have done differently. But I'm excited that our teachers are feeling excited, and that they can understand that next year you're going to make mistakes and it's not going to go well. But the coolest thing I learned out at when we went out to Kent, Washington, was don't be so nervous about the technology. Learn enough about it, then show the kids. Let them play for 30 minutes, and they will teach you. They will teach you how you can use it for science or math or social studies. And don't be afraid to tell them that. Say, I know the basics. I'm giving this to you as a tool to differentiate input back to me. And then when you figure out something cool, come and let me know. And when the teachers told me that, I thought, okay, I need to send that message to my teachers. So that's kind of my two cents.
You've done all your teachers. So we've moved it to both 7th and 8th grade. The 8th graders went. Teachers want to be like, wait.
Well, this is what's
going to
be
kind
of funny. We're going to put a little spin on that because it was telling them that 7th grade, but the good thing about that is most of our teachers teach 7th and 8th. So almost all the teachers were prepared for this. I don't know if they were prepared for it every period, but if this rolls out and this comes to be, then we can just say, but guess what? We all get to do it now. So, you know, we'll have to put a little spin on that. But they've all been involved. Every teacher has come once a month for the entire year for the training.
I just want to thank you. I think it's so important, and that's, I think, what my point I was trying to allude to. They feel supported, and I think that's what we have to make sure that we as a district provide, is that support to help them feel their inadequacies so that they can get some successes.
Well, and Justin,
so what you're doing is awesome.
Has been great at leading that and saying how important that is and bringing along myself and our technology team. And he's just like, because he was, I don't want to deal with the headaches later. Let's make sure we're front-loading as much as we can. And I think he's so right. If we front-load, it really takes care of a lot of those problems. So.
Sure. What I'm hearing, I love that you're getting the word out. What I hear on the streets in the particular area where I live, love them, they'll be pushed back with, because the cost of Common Core, now it's costing, you have to change technology. They've been saying this. To me, it's the message that we're advancing learning in a different way for kids.
Yep.
This has nothing to do with
the core.
What the core is, or it's how we're going to go about teaching and using that. So I think that's an important message, at least for me, it will be too.
We will handicap our students if we don't go
this
route sooner than later.
And I would bet in the homes of a lot of those people, they look just like what Paul said his home looks like.
Yeah.
Their kids are plugged into a device.
Yeah. This is what we learned. This is how kids learn. Why are we teaching them the old style? This is how they learn. We're 21st century learners. We need to be 21st century teachers.
When we did PLCs, we changed our hiring practices and questions that we asked and such to make sure we attracted the right teacher. I think now what teachers are going to want to come to our district if we're doing this. And we're going to get the... We're already getting the elite.
Cutting edge.
It's going to
be...
And just so you know, too, because we do value the PLC process so much, that we've told them that with this new piece, it's not an additional piece, so you will go into your PLC and address the big four questions, but now you have to ask, you learn this new technology little trick, how does it become integrated? It's not a separate agenda item. Now we talk about technology. It's how do I now teach via this new vehicle? And so the first couple PLC meetings were tough that we visited, but now they do a pretty nice job with it. Sometimes they struggle, but they're doing pretty well. So, anything else from you?
Thank you.
Just because it's my background, this is
brilliant.
And I think most of you know that. It's the idea of engaging students in a way that they are most comfortable learning is how we're going to make the biggest gains in student achievement. And when we talk about the digital curriculum and talk about extending the school day, and we talk about, you know, creating projects that are focused on content and letting kids get in and mess that up a little bit so they can see how things interact and relate is really exciting for me. And I'm excited to look at this from a larger scale, right? We're moving into Rocky Mountain. We knew that was coming. I didn't have the luxury of doing some of that pre-level. You know, they showed up one year, and here we go. And I think we've done some good things.
We like surprises.
We've made great progress. And surprises kind of, you know.
I'm happy about it.
Yeah, you smile and have fun with them. But we've done some things that haven't been so good either in our learning. And those are the things that we try and eradicate. One of the issues we had was a digital curriculum. I have a testing system for Treasures, and that's how they used it. It was a testing piece. I've had Envision. I don't know that our teachers have really leveraged that the way we would have liked to. One of those, part of that is training, part of that is understanding, part of that is I didn't have one grade with, one grade without. Access became an issue for a while, not this year. Some concerns about how we enrich them and how we support those that struggle a little bit. Teachers want more control over that. And so we've got some pilot groups and how we're working with those, how we're utilizing digital curriculum. But as soon as I can take that and I can go across all my core, the conversation changes. And it becomes easier. My PLC work becomes a lot easier. I walk into PLCs now and I see them in Envision building a common assessment to give to that team. And I see that now happening across the core. Instead of just math, that conversation can shift to everywhere else. And I think that's great.
couple of the worries that I've thought about, and you brought them up earlier, is parent involvement. One of the things that I think we need to do at Timpanogos next year is have some parent night, where we bring in, you know, Rick Klein from UEN, and we bring in some others just to train and help parents, right? Those parents are at the same place a lot of our teachers are. They know about it, they like it, but they're uncomfortable with it. They don't know some of the ins and the outs. We need to help and support them, and that's one of the things that it's on my plate, is I want to be able to provide that for them so we can communicate a little bit. The biggest worry, the struggle I've had, is on the PD side, and I'm not going to lie about that. You know, I've offered a Wednesday night PD for 2 years now, and I get anywhere from two that will have been there every night to five or six, depending on the topic. And I let my teachers choose. You know, I don't mandate that. I say, what do you want to know about today? And off we go. To 20 to 25, depending on if they're free, meaning I don't have an ELL class, I don't have a gifted and talented class, I don't have a graduate class. All of our other PD times where we could leverage that were used with PSYOP, with CMI, with some other trainings that we felt needed to boost some holes.
Yeah.
They're really important to what we're doing. The fact that we're talking about an embedded PD is huge. It's really huge to have someone walk into a classroom and with a teacher say, we're here to support and help. It's not about where you are or where you're not. It's about taking you from where you are and helping you get to where we need you to be. And to do that in a non-threatening, supportive, modeling, all of those other ways is in my mind absolutely critical. So they feel that they're not in that boat all by themselves, but there's a group of people and places to go. And that doesn't mean we don't still do Wednesday nights, because we absolutely do. But Wednesday night looks a little different now. Maybe the conversation's a little different now. We've really leveraged our iTunes U, and I don't know how many of you are aware of that, but we've got all of the projects that our kids build related to, you know, electrical circuit or landforms or cycles of the moon or all these projects that they build, their animations, their graphics. We posted them to try and communicate and celebrate them and make them available to parents. We've used the same tool for lectures at the high school with math. Worked with Tina up there, Tina Ellsworth, and she has support and lectures for all of her math classes in secondary 1-2. She's got some AP stuff that kids go to and can download and look. And what that's done is it's made classroom different, right? Now I've got a support. I don't have to be with a teacher, but I've got the lesson in front of me that I can access whenever I want. I've got Corey Lang at the high school's now got some tutorials online for the kids. So he goes and they watch that 15-minute tutorial, and what that does is it just frees up that much more time during the school day to get into those tools. They now have a background of what's going to happen. I don't have to provide that to them. They come ready for that. And the same, and it isn't just technology. My fifth grade teacher is sending home a science read. Okay, read this page. So you have a front load, a background building activity where they come to class, and now it's, okay, what did you learn? What does that mean? How does that tie into yesterday's lesson? How we leverage the school day looks different when we leverage all the tools, and I think we have a lot of tools out there. The digital curriculum is huge, and there are others that just add to it that make it more exciting. And when it comes down in the end of the day, we've engaged kids in the content that we've asked them to know. And the more we can engage them and the more frequently they can be engaged with it, they're probably going to learn, which is really what we're after. So it's been a lot of fun, and I appreciate you considering the move, because it will make a huge difference, not just for our two schools, but it'll end up district-wide, and that's the system that we're trying to build.
Great. Brett, do you want to... We have one last video, if we can get Brett to start it for us. And this is a video that Stephanie's helped us put together. And good note to end on, and then we can have the
the next fun discussion, not so fun discussion. That's it. Thank you.
Before we move on to the revenue portion of our discussion here, any other questions for this group? They did a marvelous job, didn't they? They did a marvelous job.
Thank
I appreciate
you for your time and effort and wanting them to look into this for us.
Appreciate it a whole bunch. So now, if you flip in your booklet, the information you're getting to the revenue side of this conversation. I'm going to have Keith help me here a little bit and tell us we have a couple pages in here. One is talks about revenues, and I'll let Keith kind of get into that. And then the second document here deals with enrollments. That also affects, obviously, revenues. And I'm going to let Jim talk about that, too. So for the board's information, this first sheet is estimates for this coming fiscal year and where we kind of think we might be. So I'll turn the time over to Keith.
Page, and Jill's not here to put it up. You need, but y'all have a copy of it, I believe, don't you?
Yeah, it's
okay.
In our books.
So basically, all this page is a comparison, a mid-year comparison of this year in the first two columns versus fiscal year 2013, and then the legislative estimate for next year, fiscal 2014. And you can see that they're anticipating. You can see that they're anticipating some significant growth, which, I mean, right now we're anticipating $1.447 million more next year in state revenues than this year. The thing that made me the most nervous, this year we had 6.6% growth in number of students, and that provided a lot of additional revenue. Next year, they're saying that our WPU from K through 12 is going to go from this year 5349 to next year another 350 kids. We try to be pretty conservative when we try to project growth, because if we don't hit that. It puts us in a hole. If we've planned on it and it doesn't happen, then we're in a hole for next year. But Jim put this the next page together, and it kind of helped alleviate. I'll let Jim talk about it, but it kind of helped alleviate my concerns about that, because we've already experienced, since October 1 of this year, we've already experienced significant growth. And it's going to continue all the way to next year. So you can see that they're anticipating $1,191,000 in our regular basic program, additional revenue over this year. Some of these numbers that are negative, and I put a star next to them, they just haven't been allocated by the state yet. So I won't know how much of the special ed state program we get until mid-year next year, almost, but it'll be, you know, in the $60,000 to $70,000 range. We don't know what the special ed extended year, and then there's a couple down below also. The dual immersion, we don't know what that is yet, and we don't know what the Beverly Sorensen Elementary Arts, which is getting cut every year. We only got $33,000 this year, and the past it's been up around 70. So,
but they got a new appropriation for this year, so how that will be spread is part of the challenge that Keith has.
Yeah, so you can see that next year compared to our current year, most everything's going up. Transportation, for some reason, they're anticipating us getting a cut. These two haven't been allocated yet, so. And then, surprisingly enough, Superintendent, I don't know if you noticed this, they're saying we're going to get some enrollment growth next year, money. The $55,000 there at the bottom of the page. We haven't had that for quite a few years. So, again, this is much better news this year than we were talking about last year at this meeting. So, the problem is that, you know, that, and I don't know, you know, when we want to take a break for
or if we want to go right into the expenditure side.
We're not going to do that yet. I want him to talk about
okay.
the enrollment, and then we'll leave.
But the problem is we have some, you know, besides what we just saw, and holy cow, that's tough to follow, by the way. Thank you very much.
That's the way they want
it. Yeah. I don't have a video to show you.
You need pictures of kids with Beatles songs.
So. Yeah. So
that positive 1.4 million is enough to make your heart warm.
Yeah, it's
all certainly
going
to help.
The problem is the teachers have been told that, you know, everybody's going to get a 2% raise. And the problem is
insurance.
Most of that got eaten by the retirement increase that we're hit with every single year. So we got to do a little
creative
PR work here for a little while. So anyway, Jim, do you want to go ahead?
We'll get into that. I want Jim to talk about the meeting.
I can't handle this. Sorry.
Angela will be proud.
It feels like something serious.
I'm like Mr. Monk when stuff like that happens.
So talk about that first page in the backside.
What this page shows, it just simply where we were at October 1 with every grade. I'm looking at the top chart first.
October
1 of this current year, and then just taking what has happened each grade throughout this year and then projecting that forward. So obviously we don't know kindergarten numbers yet, but each grade just rolled on forward. So, and then taking on the bottom chart is what each school is at minus kindergarten again, because we don't know how that will grow until we get those numbers down. But so far this year, since October 1, we are up 2.5% just mid-year.
Can I just point one thing out? When I first saw this yesterday, the total for this year, the 5,089, does not include the 482
kindergarten.
Yeah. We're almost 5,600 kids. And that's just so that he can do his comparison.
Right. So we can see where the growth is.
So the 2.5 is without kindergarten.
Right.
That's right. So
it is rolling this year's kindergarten
into
next year's first.
Okay.
So we're up already 2.5% from October with growth. And then as you go through at the bottom chart, you can see how growth is hitting each of the different areas. Obviously, Heber Valley getting a significant amount of growth, and that's without knowing what that kindergarten is going to be, which their kindergarten last year was the single biggest impacted growth issue we had. They jumped all the way up to 168 just in their building with kindergarten last year. So that gives you an idea of what each school is going to be experiencing next year. Again, that's minus the kindergartens in each grade. And if we're looking at wondering about that growth, as of last week when I put these together, we're up 2.5% already.
And how many kindergarten children did we register, Jill, approximately?
356.
356?
And 127 of them were Heber Valley.
Do you know how many we did last year?
Last year at kindergarten registration, I think we only did like 320.
Okay. Last year we hired kindergarten teachers the third week of August.
Yeah.
Because of the kids that showed up.
Right.
That we just didn't know. And I think that's typical of the kindergarten world.
That's right. And that, the way I look at that with the numbers we had from the previous year to this, we're on track to have that 482 plus. I would be surprised if we have 500 kindergarten.
So on the back side of that page, Dan, goes back to something I gave the board at a board meeting earlier. This was the projections that the state office was projecting us for next year, which would kind of contribute to Keith's conversation about growth. So if you look at Wasatch and you kind of see where we were clear back in 2002 and then move over there to where the line is there, it showed our growth in the October 2012 count We were at 55.85. That includes the kindergarten, and the percentage was at 6.3%. Then you go over to projecting October 2013. They're showing us just under 6,000 kids, or 5,953, and a growth of 368 kids. So we could be, if Eric's right, it could be, you know, more, depending on if we, you know, if we jump 500 something kids in kindergarten, you know, there's a pretty good chance we're going to be higher than that, growth rate right there. So, okay, that's, so again, when you're in the business we're in, it's much better being a system that's growing. Yet, and finally, now the state is giving us additional money for growth as part of the WPU that Keith talked about earlier. It has helped us slightly in previous years, and at least one of the years we didn't receive any additional money for growth, and maybe more than that. And so that really hurt us. So we had to fund those additional kids without getting any help from the state. So go ahead, Blake.
Where do they get their numbers for projected growth? Do you know?
They use
birth rates.
And there's a study done by the University of Utah for all counties. They use that information. I have access to that information, too, and have used it in our projections. This is consistent with projections that we've been at, except it's accelerating even more than I thought. So Keith and I are a little nervous. Was 6.3 just an anomaly? That's what he's saying. I'm saying the same thing, but the state, who is actually, as I've gone through and checked all these years, I've been here all the years that are shown on this form, the state has underestimated our enrollment every single year. Okay?
No, I just noticed something really interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
In the span of these years, Park City was slightly bigger than us in 2002, and now we're 1,600 kids more than they are 11
right.
years
that's
later.
Crazy, huh?
That's amazing.
Right. So the good news for this, again, is, and we worked hard with the legislature this year to get them to fully fund growth. It was a big deal in terms of having that be part of the full legislative package that was finished. And in my mind, and most of us thought that that's exactly what they did. And they basically put that in as, that's something we're not going to fiddle around with. We need to make sure that happens from year to year to year, which is a great big deal for us, particularly in light of the fact that we're a great big growing school district. Okay, we're one of the fastest growing in the state. Our trend now is that it's actually accelerating. That helps us, but it also creates other needs that we have to work on. And we've been talking about those things in other meetings, and we'll talk about more about it today. So what I thought we'd do now, if it's okay, Blake, lunch is ready to go. It would help our meeting if we had less time for lunch and more time back here. So can we kind of do it in a half hour?
About 15 minutes.
Okay.